All right, everybody, welcome to the debut edition of No Notes, the show with no research, just guys talking. Episode one, Sean Ross Sapp, the phenomenal Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful.com, Fightful Select. It's so good to actually like do a show with you, my friend. I know we've kind of been Twitter acquaintances for a little bit, but it's cool to be doing this. Thank you for doing this, by the way. How are you?
Yeah, we've hovered around and orbited around each other for quite a while. Got a lot of mutual friends and all that stuff, but it's good to finally do a show with you.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to be doing it. Like I said, I mean, I actually sat in for you with Kate on a post show once. That was exciting. I just had your little name bar in front of me. I was watching you, and I think it was Alex, do the Dynamite post show, and I was just like on my phone. And then I just hear, and then Kate will be hosting the Rampage post show with Jarrett Bailey. And then I look up, I was like, oh shit, I'm Jarrett Bailey. That's neat. That's neat.
Did I break the news to you? Had Kate you actually, cleared that with you?
She had mentioned it to me, but I don't think it had been like finalized yet. She's like, hey, Sean's not going to be around Friday. Would you like to do the show? I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? But it had never been like, I didn't know for sure. So that's kind of how I found it. Okay, cool. I guess I am doing this.
I definitely wish she would have cleared that before, but I don't like working Fridays, so I'll take it.
It was a lot of fun. So I don't know if you saw it, but my whole thing when I do those shows, because I do a few with Jeremy too, and every time that I've done it, I've tried to like just do a gimmick. So I did, what was it MJF and Butch in one night that night? I felt very accomplished.
Admittedly, the first time I saw that, I was like, what the hell is he doing? Like, what the hell is he doing? Because when I started Fightful, I was big on like, people don't wear wrestling shirts and stuff like that. Don't show bias or anything like that. And now I'm like, I don't care. You can wear a Bushwhacker shirt if you want. Like, I don't give a damn.
That's fantastic. But obviously, like, the reason I have you on is, I mean, one, you're fantastic. You actually helped get me back into wrestling. I hope you know that. That's a big honor.
Sorry to hear that.
The first, what was it? I mean, I was into it as a kid. I think every kid was kind of into wrestling at one point. And then like, I don't know, 20, I was like eighth grade. I just kind of fell out of it. And then probably like my sophomore year of college, like a What Culture Countdown list appeared on my YouTube feed. It's like, all right, wrestling, why not? Let's see what this is about. And then I kind of got sucked back in. And then I saw Quizlemania. And I was like, who the hell is this guy who's just loving all this heat? Sean Ross Sapp, he makes me laugh. So that's kind of how I first got acquainted with you. But how did you first get acquainted with wrestling? Was that always something that, you know, in the forefront of your mind, like, I want to be a wrestling journalist, media member, whatever the word you want to use for it?
So it was, I'll never forget the first thing I saw. It was a situation where there was a big cage around a ring. Ric Flair was standing on one turnbuckle. A guy with face paint was standing on another turnbuckle. And then Sting climbed up the cage. And I was like, I don't know what's going on here, but I need more of that. And then quickly thereafter, I discovered WWF, which was even more colorful and more vivid. And the lights were even brighter because that's what attracted me to it. I saw the face paint. I saw the big blonde hair. I saw all that stuff. And I was like, cool. Then I flip the channel and it's like, well, there's the Rockers and the Legion of Doom and all kinds of stuff like that. That's what really locked me in and made me go, all right, this is awesome.
Who's your first favorite wrestler? Do you recall like having
Marty
a favorite?
Marty Jannetty.
You were the Marty Jannetty guy? That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought, and he was great in the mid-90s too when he would stay straight. But man, it was... It was a Marty Jannetty household. I hid behind my mother and cried when they split up, and I was like, oh no, what? But I was like, Marty's gonna get him back. And I mean, I guess kinda he did briefly. Like he cracked Sherry with a mirror and all that, and beat him in a great Intercontinental title match at one point. But man, it was. It was a struggle being a Marty Jannetty fan growing up. It really was, because I think it kind of primed me for being a Reds fan and a Bengals fan for all those years. It's like, man, you know the talent's there. You know that at any given time, you've got an Adam Dunn or a Joey Votto or maybe a Carson Palmer or a Chad Ochocinco. There's that talent there, but they just never break through. It's never quite as good as it could be. And yeah, man, what a bummer.
So have you always like lived in like that Kentucky, Cincinnati, like Ohio yes. range? Like, is that where you like grew up?
Yeah. I lived in a small town about, I always say in between Cincinnati and Lexington, but it's equal parts inconvenient to get there from both places. It's not like in between them. Like if I drive from here, Lexington to Cincinnati, it's 70, 80 minutes, but I don't live like 35 minutes in between. Oh cool. No, I lived like an hour 20 off to the side of both of them. So, and same distance pretty much from Huntington, West Virginia, but I rarely went there. Okay. But yeah, always in that area.
Fantastic. So yeah, I mean, the Bengals were obviously in the Super Bowl. I write about football for a livelihood. I thought about you so much during that playoff run. I hope you know that. Just like, oh, you know what?
Man.
Sean Ross Sapter deserves nice things.
I was so ecstatic. Because, I mean, last year, about midway through the year, I was like, well, very clearly not the Bengals year. But we got some hope for the future, right? There were areas to improve on. Then they went on that insane run. And once they got to the playoffs, I was like, okay, I have to be there for the playoff game. I have to see a Bengals playoff game.
Oh, were you there for Wild Card weekend then?
Yeah, I was there for the Raiders game. Jeff Hawkins flew in from California. Another one of my friends flew in, and we all went to the game together. It was so cold, but I was like, I have to be there. I want to see this in person, because when you've been a Cincinnati sports fan as long as I have, you never know really when the next one's going to happen. I still remember Scott Rolen striking out to end a playoff series. And I'm like, who cares? They're going to be back to tons of these. And it just didn't happen like that. So I've never like lost sight of that. And then when they beat the Raiders, I was like, I think they can go to the Super Bowl. I really thought at that moment that they could, because they had beaten the Chiefs twice already. So I was like, man, it's possible. They can do this.
So growing up, were you like ever hovering like, okay, maybe I'll write about, you know, football, baseball, or write about wrestling. Maybe I'll do all three. Was there, what was like kind of the definitive, when did that happen? We were like, okay, wrestling it is.
I think even at that early age, I always knew I was going to have something to do with wrestling, but it was real close to being baseball. But I loved baseball more than anything as I was growing up, but I was a pretty undersized like kid, so I didn't really get to play a lot of sports consistently between like elementary school and college, because I didn't grow into my body, into my frame, all that stuff until then. Then I was picking up like MMA, and I was training wrestling and a lot of stuff like that. So I kind of fell out of baseball. It's like, it's not that fun when you're 30 pounds lighter than everybody else and you've got like 75, 80 mile an hour pitches whizzing by your head. And you're like, ah, you know what? This might break me in half. But I always loved baseball. But I think by the time high school rolled around, I was like, it's going to be wrestling. I'm going to have something to do with that. Later on, it was MMA, though. Like, I thought I was going to put all my eggs in the MMA basket. And I can't tell you how excited I am that I didn't do that.
Are you just not like big into MMA anymore? Or is that just one of those things that you're like, eh, not for me?
Oh, I love MMA. I love training MMA a lot more than. Okay, I don't want to say more than pro wrestling. I like training pro wrestling more, but I was better right out of the gate at training MMA than I was any other sport by far. Like, I picked it up quicker than anything, and I wasn't really terrible at any sport that I played, but how quickly I picked up MMA made me go, oh my gosh, I could probably do this. And at the time, there weren't a lot of media members that had any experience. There were a few. But then I was like, well, I like wrestling a lot more. And there also aren't a lot of media members with a lot of experience there either. So I had learned by then that I could kind of do both and mix them. Plus, my background is in catch wrestling. And that is sort of a hybrid of MMA and pro wrestling. So that was kind of perfect. So having that ability to bounce back and forth really helped me out. And I mean, I still train occasionally now just to try to sharpen up and stuff, but I'll always love MMA, but I am not the tune in at 7 p.m. for the first prelim guy anymore. Like nothing will make you fall out of love with MMA faster than covering it, because all those 7-8 hour WrestleManias we complained about, that's every Saturday in the UFC, every Saturday.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that. So, I mean, you train pro wrestling. Have you like how many matches have you worked in your life? Have you like been in the ring like a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot. So I think I probably worked about 40 or 50 pro wrestling matches outside of gym matches, so to speak.
Sure.
Because in catch wrestling, a lot of times you would just go out there and you'd say, okay, we're going to chain stuff. Just don't call anything. Just naturally do it. And I mean, that's how we sort of learned to work. But probably about 40 or 50 since Fightful started. When Fightful first started, I was big on like, okay, I'm not going to wrestle anymore. It's just going to be this. Now I'm like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I want to have fun. I had a pretty severe neck injury that kept me from wrestling for a while.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, if I can go out and have some fun, I'm still going to do it. And I haven't since before the pandemic. I've only had 3 matches since Fightful started, and they were all under a mask because I didn't want anybody to be like, oh, he's promoting this show he's on. Oh, he's doing this. Now I'll do whatever the hell I want. I don't care. I'm going to have fun. But one of those matches has like 55,000 views on YouTube and nobody knows it's me. And I love it.
Is that one under a mask?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's only one match out there that I had that's on video. And I think it's like my second match I ever did. But
was that the one that Adam put on one of the Quizlemanias?
Yes.
For one of the rounds? Okay.
Yep. And back then I preferred to work with the guy that I wrestled then because he was my catch wrestling coach.
Okay.
And quite honestly, I was probably not physically in a spot where I should have been taking bumps because my neck was really messed up. My back was really messed up, but I trusted him. I trusted him with my life and with my safety and all that. And it was always satisfying because we could implement some catch wrestling stuff. We could promote the MMA gym as well. There were a lot of things that we would do there, but I've always loved just learning about wrestling. So I care more about even training wrestling than I do performing anymore.
I think if I trained MMA, I would die. I think that's the conclusion I've come to, is that if I ever tried to do that, I would just get eviscerated. I don't know how people do that. It's an art that I can admire from afar. I cannot. No way in hell do I think I could ever. No, absolutely not.
I was very optimistic about my MMA future early on. And then I want to say like maybe 2 months in, I cracked a vertebrae in my neck.
Oh.
And that led to some nerve damage down my right arm. And when I came back from that, and there were like 18, 19 year olds in there that were so fast and they didn't have that nerve pinching. They didn't have that hesitation of, oh, well, what if this happens? I was like, nope. I was realistic. I was like, this is not going to work for me. I could still compete. And I did in like grappling competitions and stuff like that. But if your right arm isn't firing off, then you're not going to really realistically be in a prime situation for that. Messed up my shoulders, and it was hard for me to even keep my hands up. So I was like, well, I'm not Anderson Silva. I'm not just going to weave out of the way of everything. That's not realistic either. But then when I started to train more pro wrestling, I was like, this is much easier because instead of my opponent working against me to exploit the things that hurt me the most, I've got my catch wrestling coach in here who knows that my neck has been messed up. He knows what to not work around. We did an entire match on the opposite arm, like of what people usually work, because he was like, I know you can't feel 2 of your fingers in that arm. Ugh. I'm not even going to bother working that. So that's another reason I liked pro wrestling a lot more. You had somebody working with you as opposed to against you in that type of situation. And it satisfied my competitive urges too, which made me very happy.
That's awesome. Let's talk about your college years. Where did you go to school?
I went to Morehead State University.
Okay.
I went there part-time for a while, went there full-time for a little while, but I ended up leaving before I graduated because I got the Fightful offer. Like I was working towards my degree, and I had a very set goal of if I just make this amount of money doing what I love, I'll be happy. And I got that amount from Fightful for my offer. And I was like, all right, I'm going to leave school. There were a lot of things that it taught me and helped me with. It did not teach me $70,000 worth of stuff. That's for sure. I would love if they would hit me up and be like, hey man, we're going to give you an honorary degree. Just put us over on Twitter. I'd be like, hell yeah, let's rock with it. Let's do it. Because otherwise, I ain't going back.
Understandably so. So how did that Fightful offer come to be? Where were some of the places that you wrote for beforehand, and how did that kind of all encompass into, you know, the Fightful gig?
First place was One Wrestling, and specifically, like, I, no disrespect to One Wrestling, I didn't give a damn about One Wrestling. Mm-hmm. I wanted to work for Bill Apter. That's it. He was the guy that helped form a lot of that stuff for me in the 90s, and I would read a lot of his writing and a lot of the magazines that he helped put together. But that specifically was a person I wanted to work with. Didn't get paid for a long time. I would pick up a lot of ghostwriting and freelance stuff on the side, living off student loans and stuff like that, trying to make this work, teaching kickboxing, doing social media for places, doing anything that I could to make a few bucks here and there while also gaining experience. That was my thing. If I'm making even 10 bucks to help set up this ring or something, okay, cool, that's experience that I could apply. I left One Wrestling. Well, I didn't leave One Wrestling. I wrote there for 5 years just because of Bill. That's it. But I had started with Fansided, which...
Both of us share a little bit of a workplace alma mater then.
So I went there, and I'm sure you know how that is. But it existed, and it happened. I went to What Culture, and... let me tell you, that was a miserable experience.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I got told by Matt Holmes, who owns that site, that I should get out of news writing and never do it again. Yeah, he hired me full time. He had me quit all my freelance obligations.
Wow.
And this was my own stupidity, being younger. Had me sign a contract. He's like, I want you to be our news guy. Because at the time, their creator program was structured in a way you were encouraged to do the lists. Because that's 10 pages. 10 pages means more clicks means more money. Mm-hmm. The exchange rate from the UK is really nice. But I was the only person that was really writing a lot of news besides maybe a guy that they had on staff. And he was like, you know, these don't really pay that much, but I see that you're doing it. And I said, yeah, well, I see that the site needs it. And he goes, well, I admire that. Let's bring you on full time. How about this amount? Quit all your other obligations. And within a week, he had kind of changed. The first day he changed, he was like, we've got a certain number of news slots. You've already filled them up. So let's do some lists. And I said, all right, boss man, you want me to do some lists? I'll do some lists. It ain't my forte, but we'll rock with it. I was like, in the future, you should probably want more than 3 or 4 news slots on your page, though, because news don't stop at 9 a.m. Eastern on a weekday.
Keep going. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, within a couple of weeks, he just was a miserable, horrible guy to me. And again, this is before like the Adams were there or Simon Miller, any of those wonderful people that I've come to know and enjoy their work. But he had also hired a U.S. editor, David Bixenspan, who wasn't far behind me in the same thing. Like, we got these full-time offers, and he would tell me how horrible my writing was. He'd say, you need to write like this guy, and I'd look at his writing, and it was really dumbed down and bad. And he said, to save yourself some grief, you need to get out of news writing because you're not good at it, and I don't think it's ever going to work out for you. Boy, was that bitch wrong.
So wait, I mean, if you don't mind me asking you this question, is that why maybe, you know, I see you on a lot of WrestleTalk stuff. Is that why I may not see you on a lot of What Culture stuff?
Oh, I would absolutely do something with Simon Miller if he asked. 100%. Okay. I have nothing against anybody who has ever been at What Culture except for the guy who ran the thing, Matt. He was a horrible, horrible person to me. Mm-hmm. And other than that, Simon Miller is a wonderful dude. He creates incredible content. I'm admittedly not as familiar with a lot of the other people that are there, but... I love the Adams. They were both wonderful as well. Nothing against anybody but him. And if Simon asked me to do something, I would do it because he's awesome.
Yeah, Simon Miller might be the most like genuine, positive person in the world today. He's a great, absolutely fantastic.
No, yeah, that's... I'll never hold something like that. Like, there were some people that screwed me about it, Fansided too, but they were gone almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And like, what am I going to do? Hold it against everybody that's ever worked at Fansided? Sure. No way. I'm not going to hold something against people because Josh Sanchez was shitty to me or something like that. Like, I'm not doing that. Like, sometimes you got to work for people that aren't necessarily wonderful to you. And sometimes you're working with people that aren't as wonderful to other people, but you want to kind of, that definitely shaped me as a guy who has people working with him. I was like, I'll never treat people like I was treated here or here. And I looked at places like One Wrestling and I said, I want to treat people the way Bill Apter does that work with me. And that there are some really positive influences there.
No, that's good. So let's talk about, you know, the current guys that you got with you right now at Fightful, because they are a lovely bunch who I've been lucky enough to come to know most of them. Jeremy Lambert, the first time I did any sort of wrestling thing whatsoever, Jeremy was one of the people that I reached out to. I was like, look, man, I write about football, but I like wrestling.
Yeah.
Me and my other football friend are doing just this, you know, just one-off show. Would you like to be part of it? He was very cool. Him and I have become really good friends since then. The entire set of people that you have there just seem to enjoy what they do. And I think that's heartwarming. You let Denise Lowe blow you at a show. I thought that was fantastic. So, I mean, what's it like working with just that seemingly great group of people?
It's really awesome. It started off legitimately as just me. I was the first hire. Well, I was the first hire. Vince Russo was the second hire.
Vince Russo was the second hire, and
he might have been hired before me. Like, we were doing Wrestling Inc. shows together, and we actually had phenomenal chemistry with one another. Speaking of Wrestling Inc., Raj Geary, we butted heads here and there, but I mean, that guy hired me within 3 weeks of me being told I should never write wrestling news again, and for the most visited wrestling website in the world, and opened up a lot of doors, gave me a lot of opportunities there. So I'll always have love for him for that. And I did some shows with Vince, and that was one of the first hires. It was like him and Showdown Joe Ferraro and maybe another guy, because they wanted some established people in wrestling and MMA to start this. And then they wanted a guy like me who could do a little bit of everything. But then I got to scout for the first time, and that was a lot of fun for me, because like Carlos Toro was there, and he does such great translation work and is a phenomenal boxing journalist, but he was in college and he started up a podcast just to have me on it. Then he's like, hey, can I work for you? And I was like, yeah, you can work for me. Why not? I read a main event recap on Cage Side Seats, and I found Alex Palowski.
Solid graps.
Yeah. And it was one of the funniest things I had ever read. And I was like, oh my God, I got to have him. There was a girl named Anna Bauert who hit me up about transcript work. And I went to her YouTube because I got to make sure that when I hire people, they're not Nazis. And I went on her YouTube, and she's an actress, and she had this amazing monologue about abortion. It was an acting monologue where she had pretended she had an abortion. And I was like, why do I know her? Why is she so familiar? She had been on a bunch of Investigation Discovery shows.
Like as an actress on the
as
like
an
the
actress.
Remake? That's awesome.
Yeah. So I hired her there. And then there are people like Jeff Hawkins and that I just knew and I was familiar with. But I always like to go after ambitious people, people who want to do more than just one thing. And then what will happen, like Alex, he wanted to write, he wanted to do podcasting, he wanted to do all kinds of stuff. But now he's found his forte. It's podcasting. He's great at that. That's the one thing he's good at. Every job on the site I've done before, but now I'm the news reporter and I do podcasts. I don't do a bunch of transcripts because I'm not that good at it. Jeremy's great at it, so we lean on him for that. Kyler, we had him do some reviews and some social media stuff. Well, he's really great at social media and doing clips, so he kind of leaned into that. I like to have people that are ambitious but aren't shying away from really leaning into what they're great at, and I found that that's better for people. Also, I don't put people on like per article, and I think that eases their mind an awful lot when they don't got to write for clicks as opposed to knowing what they're going to make that month, and maybe they'll get bonus or something like that, because that always worked best for me, knowing that I could for sure pay these bills. Yeah. There are a lot of infrastructure things that I picked up that I think have helped with morale an awful lot. I think lead to our people being happy. Also, I mean, the fact that our payroll is like twice the size of the biggest wrestling websites, that helps too. That we're, because I wanted to honestly fuck up the wage in wrestling. I wanted to completely warp that, because it was like a living wage is messing up the pay scale in wrestling. Because I've been at places where I was getting $1.50 an article and it would get 100,000 views.
And you, that, and I both, cool, brother.
Yeah. That shouldn't be normal.
No, it shouldn't. Oh man, are we about to just like unmask the horridness of, you know, early journalism writing? Because I will, sure, gladly do that with you. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a tough life. It's a tough road to start on, definitely.
And I ain't gonna say that anybody's getting rich at Fightful. I was poor for a lot longer than I had any semblance of money, and sometimes I feel guilty about that. And then I'm like, wait a second, I did all this work for nothing, no money. I did this. I didn't take a day off for 4 years. I shouldn't feel guilty about this. And by the way, I want to help out this person and this person, and I want this person to have a better quality of life, so I'm going to hire them for this. I always try to promote within too. Like, I would say 9 times out of 10 when I post something and I'm like, hey, Fightful's looking for somebody to do this, I'll have somebody within say, hey, I think I can handle that, and I'll just bump up their pay, because I would rather, instead of delegating it to another person, I'd rather improve the quality of life of somebody who's working with us and has been for a long time. I mean, that's why Jeremy's running around on like a gold moped right now. Like solid gold moped. And he complains that it's not enough. He already got the platinum bird scooter that he just goes around Cuyahoga Falls on. Never charges it up. Really disrespectful.
Oh man, I had the pleasure of sitting with Jeremy at a Dynamite and watched him just absolutely
pleasure.
He just absolutely popped when he heard Bryan Danielson's theme song kicking, because they weren't advertised for the show, and he went conkers badonkers. It was great. I was so happy for him. Jeremy Lambert, what a do you hope that the Avalanche won the cup for him?
I do, because I don't care that much about hockey, but I want him to be happy. So, yeah. Man, he's been great. He's been like such a major part of Fightful taking off. Like, when I went on my first vacation in years in 2018, I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe I'm leaving for a couple days. Mm-hmm. And now it's okay. And me and Jeremy used to be work every day, wake to sleep guys. Now we take our weekends off, we recharge, we relax and all that. But then sometimes it'll be like, nah, man, I think I'm going to work New Japan at 3 a.m. And then I wake up and there's 9 articles, because he understands what it takes to make a good wrestling website. He understands from a content perspective and from a headline perspective, especially, but to not make the headline misrepresentative or anything, but also to have fun with it. He has been like one of the biggest parts of Fightful being a success.
No, Jeremy's great. And like I said, I'm very happy to have made a friend of him through this lovely little world. So another mutual friend of ours, I don't know if you follow Louis Dangor on Instagram, but I do. He's in Lisbon, and like the fifth picture that he posted over on this post, he's like at some sort of nightclub with his shirt unbuttoned, looking like he's having a great time. I love Louis with all my heart. Oh, he's fantastic.
I don't follow him on
Instagram. You absolutely should.
Oh, I do follow him on Instagram. Where? I don't see it. Where is it? Oh, okay. It's
the latest post, and then you scroll through. Over. Yeah.
Jay's eating a burger, WWE 2K22. He's at the Royal Rumble. I saw him there. I treated him to dinner at the Royal Rumble.
Oh, that was nice of you.
Yeah. Oh, wait, never mind. I wasn't cycling through his last post. I was cycling through all of his
posts. Yeah. It's the most recent post.
Oh, and, like, my God, Louie. Louie!
I can't tell if that's like a fanny pack he's got draped across his chest or if it's like some sort of satchel, but you know,
I love this kid.
He looks like he's having a great time, and that at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Bless that.
I don't know how to follow that up.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was Louis is, how do I describe Louis? I mean, you know,
he's Louis so good-hearted.
He's great.
He's such a good-hearted person.
He is great, and he was. Him and Jeremy were both on that first show that I did with Ben, just to as a fantasy draft. So we're just trying to have fun with it, and he was just so in for it. He's made it so just a warm environment, a warm energy that he brings. I love Louis so much. The crap that he gets for just being, you know, a more so WWE guy, he just leans into it at this point. Good for him. Good for you, Louis, if you're listening to this.
Yeah. Oh, man, that guy. That guy.
Fantastic. Oh, I love Louis. Oh, my goodness. So Denise, she's fantastic. You guys do a ton of stuff together. I don't know Denise very well. You obviously do. Is she like a full-timer with you, or is she more like independent freelancer that just keeps kicking ass in everything that she does?
She's a freelancer, and I think she likes it that way. We had talks at one point of making her full-time and possibly doing that, but at that time especially, we could not have afforded it. Really, now it's more of a possibility, but it would change so many things. Like, if we were to bring Denise on full time, it's like, okay, well, I would want her to host everything that I'm not hosting, but we've got Alex and Denise, or Alex and Kate Tuesdays, and I would lean off of Fridays, but that's sort of replacing something that I already host. I would want her to host Impact, but we already have a great team there.
Speaking of that, next time you see Joel Pearl, kick him in the nads for me.
And I would love to. I'm going to win the Fightful Championship. But I think she likes being independent. Now, if there's ever a time that we need to talk about that and she wants a full-time thing, that's going to be something that I'd be super interested in. Mm-hmm. Because with her comes a lot of interviews, comes a lot of information, comes great hosts. She's wonderful, but I think she likes being independent, and being independent and versatile has been beneficial for her career. Repeatedly telling people, I'm not signing a contract. If you want me, you can be okay with me doing this for other people. I think that's great. And I've always been open to that. Like, Jeremy still wrote for 411 for a while he was with us. Like, I don't want to limit the ability for our independent contractors to make money elsewhere, as long as it doesn't directly impede. Like, Denise does a competing post show for AEW. Like, who cares? Like, if people want to watch my show bad enough, they're going to watch my show, or they're going to watch it after. But I am not about, like, limiting people's ability to make money.
No, and she does so much work for so many different things, like her own YouTube stuff, you guys. She's fantastic, and it's awesome to see her grow, and it's been cool to, you know, kind of become a little bit more, how do I want to describe it? Twitter friendly with our Twitter friends. It's cool. It's power of social media. I love it. So in terms of Fightful now, I mean, it's become ginormous. By the way, congratulations on the new contract and partial ownership of it. That's fantastic and well-earned for you. Is there anything, you know, for the site, for everything as a whole, like big plans coming up, or can you not reveal that to me if there are?
Sorry, you cut out a little bit. For Fightful in general?
Yes.
I mean, there's somewhat. I mean, we've always got something that we're working on. I've been trying to put together something for Fightful Select Espanol for a while, where basically our stories would get translated directly into Spanish. And then the hope is that we'd start to develop some sources in Mexico as well for any number of things that would kind of help and go from there. We have actually considered doing TikTok. We're working on nailing down the handle. Somebody stole the Fightful handle and pretended to be us for like a week and then gave up on it. Yeah. So we're trying to get that back as well. We've also thought about doing like a Discord. I've briefly talked to a guy that I saw had done some good work, but we've got a few things that we're looking to expand on. We've just started to add our post shows to Twitch too, because some of the content there waned a little bit when Overbooked started. A lot of the stuff that was on Twitch is now on Overbooked. So I want to make sure there's a steady stream of content there as well. But we're always working on doing new stuff. Like, I never want to have the same graphics all the time. I want to update the look and the feel all the time.
Well, it's definitely lured a lot of people in, Fightful Select. How many, you made an announcement not that long ago about a milestone for Fightful Select subscribers. What is that at now? I mean, I know that just continues to grow.
It was at 6,800 last month, which, man, that's, I expect churn in the summer because it's not WrestleMania season. It's summer. Yeah. People are out doing other stuff. But then last month we broke a record, which is 6,800. And as far as I know, no other wrestling Patreon has 3,000. Wow. And if they do, they just hit it. So twice that is what our floor is now. And that is so humbling to me, because I was a guy who didn't, I didn't use paywall wrestling stuff when I was younger. And I know a lot of the people that subscribe to us just do it to support what we do. And it has changed our lives. It's helped so much. And my method was always just reliable, consistent, accurate. And eventually it snowballs. And eventually people will take note of that. And it worked out really well. So I'm happy. I mean, honestly, if we stayed at 6,000 forever, I would be completely satisfied with that.
Oh, no, it's obviously taken off very well. I can't have you on here without talking a little bit about wrestling. I feel like that would be sacrilege of me. But obviously, for people who may not be into wrestling or just casually, it seems that the most popular phrase right now for people who are trying to convince others to get into wrestling is that there's no better time to do it than now because it's as red hot as it's been in 20 years or so. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
That wrestling is as hot as it's been in 20 years?
Yes.
No, I think that a few years ago it was hotter. I think that around the time that Ronda Rousey did that thing where she hopped the barricade with The Rock and all that stuff, I think that there, from a mainstream aspect, I think that there was more attention being paid to it. However, as far as competition, yeah, I think definitely the AEW being around is the hottest it's been in 20 years for sure. You could argue maybe for a while when TNA was competing on Spike and all that, that there was a period. There were a couple months at the beginning of 2010 where it looked like it would be. But from a competition perspective, absolutely. People just consume it so different. I can tell you that news gains more traction than I've seen in a long ass time. So that makes me very happy. But that, I don't know if that's because of my personal following where it seems like it's more so, but I think it can get there. I think that there are certain things like CM Punk, like Cody Rhodes, that at any given time, MJF, where I'm like, damn, this is hotter than it's been. I just think from a mainstream perspective, a few years ago, it was a little bit hotter, but now you've got a whole nother company to add that.
What's it like for you when something huge like that happens? Because, I mean, everybody, seems like a lot of people on Twitter turn to you, are like, okay, let's see what Sean says about this. Let's see what's happening. What's it like for you trying to like, okay, let me talk to this source. Let me talk to, when a big story like that happens, is it just like a million different things going on in your head?
Yeah, at any given time. Like, I mean, right now as we're filming this, AEW just put out a comment on Jeff Hardy. So I had a bunch of people calling me. And I'm like, hey, I don't know. I just know that they hadn't talked to him.
I'm impeding on your work progress.
No. No, we got people on the staff. It's all good. But at any given time, there's going to be, I mean, every day I get at least 100 messages, at least a minimum on a slow day. Sometimes maybe not a Sunday, but every other day, it's like 100 messages at least between email, text, DM, inquiries, and stuff like that. So there's always like multiple stories to work on, except like when the MJF thing happens, you drop it, you pour all your resources into that.
What was that like? I mean, obviously that was the most recent, like huge one. Everybody is leaning into it's a work, it's a shoot, it's a work shoot, it's a shoot work. But I mean, for especially someone like you, who's like livelihood is like, okay, I need to figure this out and try to get as much information to people as I can. What the hell was that weekend like for you?
So I had spoken with MJF prior to that, so I was aware of the frustrations, and it was wild to me that so many people are like, haha, you're getting work, don't you even know? I'm not sure why they don't assume that's my first instinct when talking to any wrestler, much less MJF.
Yeah.
To the point to where I've told MJF in the past, all due respect, we have a great professional rapport, but anything you even say about yourself, I have to verify with somebody else. So if he's saying, I'm frustrated, I got to go ask like 10 people and say, hey, have you heard about MJF being frustrated that are independent from him, that aren't even tied to him? Because who knows whose ear he could have possibly got into. So I was aware of that before. However, there were some specific conversations that he had about some very serious matters that 100% he would not have worked. And if he did, boy, would that be aberrant and terrible. But I had heard leading to that Las Vegas weekend, like, it was going to be make or break time, that there was going to have to be a conversation had at some point. So I get word about the meet and greet, and information from the meet and greet really peppered in a lot in the week after, where I find out, oh yeah, there were a couple people there that you absolutely do not work, that were very fearful. First off, they were pissed. Then they were also fearful that something horrible happened to him. Almost had his hotel room door broken into to make sure that he was okay. Then I get word. Somebody's like, hey, I think he's trying to travel out. So I hit up my travel person. And I'm like, do you know anything about this? And they're like, I'll check. And then poof, there it is. And I'm like, oh, shit. And it's not somebody that's tied to MJF. They wouldn't know. AEW wouldn't know to leak this information or anything like that. I provided that documentation to several members of the media for full transparency. It was very wild, but I didn't believe that he was not going to show at Double or Nothing because he's a professional. I was shocked he didn't go to the meet and greet because he's a professional above all else. That was one of the craziest weekends because I did reach out to him and I was like, listen, man, completely separate of this wrestling bullshit, I need to know that you're okay physically and like that you're alive. And that got the ball rolling a little bit on just making sure that things were all right. Told me that he left the show immediately afterwards. And it's been very dark since then. Like not a lot of information has come through. It's always weird to me that people think that there's only one source on this thing. I talked to 15, 20 people about this story and a lot of other stories. Like you always go beyond just what that one person says, unless they're going to put their name to it. If they put their name to it, I can run with it as they said, but there's always more to it than what people usually expect.
And obviously, you know, the whole promo that he cut on Dynamite afterwards, I'm sure that, you know, played into it a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. And at that point, I was just like, well, I thought it was a work once Monday happened. Mm-hmm. Once I found out they were having a meeting, I was like, there's no way they don't find a way to do business. But that was my belief. And anybody that is not MJF or Tony Khan that swears they know 100% what has all been a work or what has all been a shoot, they're not being truthful. Anybody that claims 100% they know this, and this was a work or a shoot, besides those two guys, I don't believe them.
All right. Well, now it's time for the greatest segue in the history of journalism. You have a Creed album.
Yeah, I do.
Do you like Creed?
So, not really, but kind of. Like, their first album, I think it was their first album, My Own Prison, was a really good one. One is an incredible song. Torn is a good song. What's This Life For? Really good stuff. And then even when they were like, hey, we can get kind of preachy with it, it was still pretty good for a while. Like, they had a good five-year run where there were some solid songs. I know Nickelback gets crapped on a lot. They had an album.
Oh, I like Nickelback.
That, like, Breathe was a great song. Yeah. Leader of Men was a great song. I think Nickelback commercialized.
I'm
going
to play this afternoon later on. Like, I'm going to be on my deck listening to Nickelback. It's going to be great.
Well, I think that they commercialized themselves separately a lot more than Creed did. I think Creed stayed a little truer to themselves. Then you got bands like Sugar Ray, who commercializing drastically helped them because their metal music sucked.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Sugar Ray the band that's in Scooby-Doo, the live action movie? I'm pretty sure that's Sugar Ray. Okay.
Yes.
I just needed
Every
to get
morning,
in my head.
Fly, When It's Over. Like, they were a metal band and they put out like this song and it stuck out like a sore thumb on the album. It was the only hit, and they said, well, that's what we're doing all the time now. And their music was better as a result. Like, sometimes selling out is great. So yeah, I guess you could say I like Creed. I prefer Alter Bridge, which a lot of the band members went to, but yeah.
So what would you classify your music taste as? Do you have like a wide-ranging net? I know personally I don't. I have a very select niche. Oh, good Christ, Sean.
I love Doja Cat. I am a Doja Cat fanatic. I got a Doja Cat vinyl last week too. I do. I think Doja Cat is brilliant. Also hilarious. You need to open up your mind, man. Check out her TikTok sometimes.
I'm not gonna.
That's the only reason I have TikTok at this point. Is
to watch Doja Cat?
Yeah, because she's funny as hell. She's so funny.
Oh, man. Here's the thing. I've broken down my like music taste and like sequences of my life. Like from like junior high to like my freshman or sophomore year of college, I was like only like rap And then I heard like metal music, and now that's really my niche, is like metal. I like country a lot too. Country's definitely like a number. Do you like country?
Oh man. Not really.
Really?
Not. I'm from Kentucky, and that's what I'm saying. Played a lot, but I don't. There are some. There's a couple that I look at. Like Gary Allen is a talented guy. I liked some of his music, even though the best song he performed was a cover of a Vertical Horizon song. But I mean, like, there's some stuff that is okay, but I don't know. I've never been like, woo, country.
That's fair. I feel like it's very, there's not really an in between for country music. It's either you're really into it or you despise it.
The level in which I like country is me saying that James Storm's theme song was one of the best country songs ever.
Okay. No, you know what? I can respect that opinion. That's good.
Because it's a great song. You know what I mean? Like, it's incredible. There are some songs like that. Like, I actually like Southern-based country rap and stuff like that an awful lot. Like Nappy Roots, I love that. Like how they.
I bet you love that song, Broadway Girls, with Lil Durk and Morgan Wallen.
Haven't heard it.
Really? I think
no.
I enjoy that song, so I feel like you'll enjoy it. Like I said, I'm not really big into rap anymore. But that is one that if you like country rap, you will very much enjoy that song.
I like Western-inspired music a lot more than I like country music.
Okay, I can get behind that too.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody needs to just like drink a Corona to George Strait at some point in their life, though.
I don't like George Strait.
You don't like George Strait?
No.
Sean?
No. Not a George Strait fan.
You just don't like the sound of it? Did he do something that I don't know about that I shouldn't like George Strait?
You know what? I'll tell you what it was.
Okay.
I was at AEW Full Gear in Minnesota, and there was a George Strait concert next door. And it really, like, clogged up traffic.
So you just hold a grudge against him for that?
Yeah, so I hold a grudge against him for that. And also, there were a lot of people walking around in cowboy hats. And I was like, I wonder if they're Hangman Page fans or something. No, they were George Strait fans.
I hold a similar grudge against fireworks. I hate fireworks. Why is that? Fireworks are the stupidest tradition. Like every 4th of July, people gather to blow shit up. I've never understood why they enjoy that.
I don't disagree with that. They have the WEBN fireworks here every Labor Day weekend.
I bet that's a blast to listen to, isn't it?
It's so stupid. But I mean, it's in Cincinnati, so I don't get to see them unless I drive up there. And I did it once. And this is before like apps on your phone to make sure you knew where you parked. Took us hours to find our car. Ugh. It was terrible. You're sitting in traffic for another hour afterwards for a 40 minute fireworks show
of shit blowing up in the sky.
So you can go get upcharged at all these restaurants. No thanks, man. My best friend he would go up there with his wife, now wife, for her birthday every year because it was like her tradition. And then my wedding happened the day it was supposed to happen and it killed the tradition for them. So he's like been forever thankful for me because he's gotten out of like 7 straight trips to go to those fireworks. It's so stupid. I agree. Like, listen, if I can see some fireworks from my porch, I'll watch them. Sure. Why not? But I'm not going to go and physically purchase fireworks with money that I could use to do something else.
Yeah. Ask Jason Pierre-Paul how that worked out for him.
Well, I mean, is he still playing?
Yeah.
Man.
I think he's still on the Bucks roster. He might have signed elsewhere. I'll look.
He's a free agent now. Yeah. I just looked. But yeah. I mean, the fact that he's still been able to play, my God.
Have you seen pictures of his hand?
Yeah, I have. It's horrible.
It's horrible. Just it's absolutely horrifying. So sticking with music, if you could pick a wrestling theme song, like a song that you would walk out to, what would it be? I have five at the top of my head.
So again, like some Western-inspired rap, I like Rihanna, Desperado. That's a good one. But for GCW, they asked, what do you want your theme song to be? And I said, well, I want Denise to be my soundtrack. I want her to be out there. I want to be like Team Rocket for wrestling. But before that, in my head, I was like, okay, I've got about 30 seconds to establish that I am a piece of shit heel. I don't want anybody out there to cheer me. I got a lot of people who are very nice about my work. I had a lot of friends there watching the show. I didn't want them to cheer me. So I was like, what would be the most obnoxious person to have as a theme song? And I landed on Bad Baby. Are you familiar with Bad Baby?
I am familiar with Bad Baby.
Okay, it's a Cash Me Outside girl.
She has a very good song with Ty Dolla Sign called Hold Me, or is it Hold Me Down or is it Trust? I don't remember the name of it, but it's actually a good song and I enjoy it. But yes, so Bad Baby.
It was going to be Bad Baby, Tory Lanez, who, you know, is out there shooting people.
Yeah, yeah.
Babyface Savage. I was like, that is the most obnoxious duo, but it starts off with a cool siren. It gets people's attention.
Yeah.
And then it goes into something fast paced. I was like, there we go. That's what I'll do. But I decided against it. But you know, maybe anything can happen in the future.
I think that 10,000 Fists by Disturbed would be an excellent wrestling intro.
There you go. There's a lot of good early 2000s rock, especially. Oh, yeah.
Especially if like it was on like a really over guy and right as the part where they say 10,000 fists in the air. Like imagine that at like Wrestle Kingdom or WrestleMania, just everybody fists in the air at the oh my goodness. Stuff of legend. I think 10,000 fists would be a good one. I've long advocated that Cody Rhodes changed his theme song to The American Nightmare by Ice Nine Kills because it's, you know, his nickname. I don't know if you're familiar with the band Ice Nine Kills, but if you're not. Oh my goodness, Sean. First of all, do you like metal?
Well, it depends on what is metal, because I might say something that's metal and be like, not quite.
I will. How do I describe Ice Nine
Kills? The answer is probably no. It's probably no. Is Doja Cat metal?
No, Doja Cat is.
She did a cover of one of her songs that was kind of metal.
Did she? What was that song?
Say So. You know what? I should send you the link right now. You can't play it, though.
Oh, yeah. Then we'll get copyright infringed.
Doja Cat, Say So, metal. Also, she did a cover of Celebrity Skin from Hole.
There's two bands that I would show you. Ice Nine Kills is one of them. Motionless and White is another. And you follow me on Twitter, so I tweet about Motionless and White a good amount.
Yeah.
They just released their new album called Scoring the End of the World. It's very much more rock based than metal. The lead singer, Chris Motionless, has the voice of an angel.
Yeah.
I will send you a few of their songs, their new album. It's number one on Spotify right now in the world, or in America, not in the world. Set number seven in the world. Let me correct myself before whoever number one in the world gets pissed off at me.
You need to click this link and give me an instant reaction to all this right, Doja here. Cat.
I'll mute myself so nobody else can hear it, but I will listen to it.
I mean, you can listen to it in your earbuds.
Well, I'm plugged into my computer right now. Okay. So here, what I'll do is I'll mute myself. You can give quick commentary on this too, just so people listening to this as a podcast don't have a little bit of dead air.
So you should probably start it at about 55 seconds.
Wait, did you email me the link or did you send it to me?
I put it in the private chat over here.
Oh my god, yeah, you did. All right, so here, let me mute this.
But around 50 seconds and tell me when you start. So this is a performance of Doja Cat, Say So from the MTV EMAs in 2020. That's the European Music Awards. And they had a bit of a metal approach to it. There's even a lot of metalhead reacts to Doja Cat videos out there. I'm telling you, she's one of the most versatile performers out there. She can sing, she can dance, she can rap, she can produce. She made a song about Mexican pizza for Taco Bell, for the love of God. It's so good.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pull it up on my phone because it's making my computer slow. So let me get to YouTube and I will pull it up.
I saw you getting a little choppy there.
Yeah.
What's with the frame rate, pal?
Hey, you know, my internet's gig speed, but when I've got so many things going on,
I was trying to download a game on PlayStation today, and it said 4 hours, and I'm like, what?
What? Okay, so you game while I pull this up. Do you play Fortnite, Sean?
No, I don't. I tried. It's just not for me.
That's fair. Okay. All right. I've got it pulled up. Let me mute myself and listen to this.
I'm telling you. It'll change your life, buddy. Doja Cat is a talent. A lot different from a lot of other pop artists, rap artists, metal artists. She is big time metal artist.
You said 50 seconds is what I should go to?
Yes.
All right. Let's do it.
About 50 seconds. Yeah. Very intrigued. Very intrigued. Great, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? Look at that talent. Yeah, look, he's impressed. He's impressed. You didn't know she brought it like that, did you?
You know what, Sean? That's pretty good.
Telling you, man.
Can I find that? Is that version like available like on like streaming platforms or anything? Or is
I don't know.
Just like a one-off?
Probably a one-off. But the fact that she did the whole celebrity skin cover for the Taco Bell commercial makes me think that maybe she's open to doing some more rock stuff. I hope she does a full rock album.
Oh my god! You know what?
Do you ever watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
I have watched Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
So like Brie Larson kicked ass in that. Yeah, like I thought she did that Metric song better than Metric did it, and I was like, damn, she needs to do a rock album. Then I found out, well, it's pretty much gospel that she sings.
Here's like, what I'm going to do, actually. I'm going to send you a picture now of the band Motionless in White. Now, they're going to come off as a little bit in your face, but I'm going to send you also a picture of Ice Nine Kills. They actually toured together this past spring-ish, and I saw them in Pittsburgh, and I could have died a happy man because of it. So I'll give you the premise on Ice Nine Kills. They started off as like a more ska punk band. They have transitioned into a metal band as of like 2015. Okay. So they did a record based off songs, fully off horror novels, called Every Trick in the Book. Very good. And then their last two albums, each song has been dedicated to a different horror movie. So that's kind of their gimmick now, is that they're the horror movie band. It's very good. Their music videos, if you're a fan of music videos, you'll love them. So they did their song called Stabbing in the Dark. It's about the Halloween franchise, Michael Myers. Very good. The American Nightmare is obviously about Freddy Krueger. So they did music videos.
Some would say it's about my reporting skills.
I'm not one of them, Sean. All right. So let me save this glorious picture of Motionless in White, and I will send this to you right now. I'll send this on Twitter. Actually, here, I wonder if I sent it to myself, if I could put it on the screen, but maybe not. We'll see.
Middle looks like Rhea Ripley.
In an interview, actually, once she started kind of going for that look, she said, "I'm basically Chris Motionless now." Chris Motionless is the lead singer of Motionless in White. Yes. And if you go to one of Rhea's most recent Instagram posts, she actually quotes the lyrics from the chorus of Pray For Me by Motionless in White. So yeah, Rhea Ripley, a big Motionless in White fan.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, my God, that's Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, every time I see her, I can't not think of Chris Motionless. It's just engraved in my head now. And then I will send you a picture of Ice Nine Kills. I will say, it's not even a phase anymore. I am a ginormous, I'm one of those people who likes Hollywood Undead.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the song, the Undead song. I thought that was really great.
That was UFC 2009 Undisputed, actually. It was on the soundtrack.
And it felt like it was the only song on that soundtrack. But I thought that was a legitimately amazing song. And at the time, I was like, oh my God, they're going to change rock music.
They did, Sean. They did just that.
They did, indeed.
So that second picture I sent you was Ice Nine Kills.
Okay. They look horrifying.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the premise, is that they're supposed to. Spencer Charnas, the lead singer, is in the middle with the Freddy Krueger hand glove. He's fantastic. Got a great voice.
The guy on the far left is just dressed as Brendan Schaub.
Isn't that who he looks like? I'm so glad that you said that. Yes, he does look a lot like Brendan Schaub.
He does. He's dressed like one of Brendan Schaub's comedy bits, so that's why it's the horror character.
Oh my goodness. So their stage presence is very cool, because for each song they get in like the whole gimmicks. They have a song about the It franchise where they'll have a little kid dressed as Georgie, like stand on the stage with a balloon and then they'll pretend to kill him. It's great. It's great stuff. So I'll send you a link to one of their music videos. It's very good. I'm hoping to make you
What's the best concert you've been to?
That concert with Motionless and White and Ice Nine Kills was good, but we weren't in the pit for it. We had like bleacher seats, so it wasn't like the same as we went to see the Amity Affliction, which is another metal band. They're from Australia. We were in the pit for that. The closest I've ever come to crying at a concert. It was beautiful.
Oh, really?
Oh, dude. So fantastic.
Any more, because about 8-9 years ago, they really cracked down on, quite frankly, a lot of pits in our area and injuries happening in there. So you weren't allowed to get too wild or anything. So if I go to a concert, I don't really want to sit down in a seat.
But yeah.
Also, if I'm there for 6 hours, maybe I do.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to a lot of rock concerts lately, but once I started to crack down on that sort of like, I wasn't in there throwing elbows or anything, but I mean,
the mosh pits there, I mean, they're really respectful. Like if somebody falls, everybody's like, okay, hold on, let's stop the carnage for a minute. And then they get back up and then it's chaos again for a little bit. So,
I think the best one I went to, the last concert I went to, was a Matt and Kim concert. And I was in the pit for that. And it was fun because they're throwing out a bunch of blow up dolls that are crowd surfing. They're like, listen, people can't crowd surf here, but we brought blow up dolls. They can crowd surf here.
That's fantastic.
I was like, cool.
I will tell you who I did see live that I was not impressed with. I saw Travis Scott live. I did not like it.
Okay.
Not a fan.
So I was a big Breaking Benjamin fan in my day.
Oh, I love Breaking Benjamin.
Went to 7 or 8 concerts. They got progressively worse to the point at the last one, the lead singer, who, you know, is the driving force behind the band, spent like 10 minutes getting every kid on stage. And I'm thinking, how the hell were so many kids allowed in here? But it took forever. He's like, hey, do you know any kids? Call them, bring them, let's go. It was so, so bad. But the worst I've seen, man, who is the worst I've seen?
Okay, you know what? I'm at a concert. I'm seeing this artist that I like. Bare minimum, I'll have a decent time. The Travis Scott one, man, I mean, obviously, like, that's still, like, I was pretty into rap. I wasn't impressed. It was just he yelled too much in the microphone rather than, like, I didn't like it.
Seether was a good surprise for me.
Seether, I bet, was good.
I thought the lead singer was going to show up just pilled out of his gourd or something, because I didn't know. He just always looks like a zombie. And they killed it. They were incredible. There was also one before the first Breaking Benjamin concert. I was like, they opened for him. They wheeled this keyboard out on stage and we're like, oh, brother, like, what the hell's happening here? And it was a band called Dropping Daylight, and they killed it. They were so good. And the guy that led them actually helped write a few Breaking Benjamin songs after that.
Okay.
They were incredible. That was really good too.
I was big into Seether when I was in like second grade. That's the first time I heard Remedy, and I loved that song. Oh, it was such a banger. The music video for it kicked ass. The first time I heard Breaking Benjamin, I heard Diary of Jane. It was on the NASCAR 09 soundtrack. This is how I get it. Like 90% of my music when I was younger was just like video game soundtracks. What was another one? MLB 09 The Show had a really good soundtrack, and I cannot remember.
All-Star Baseball or MVP Baseball had a lot of good ones as well. But I've discovered Breaking Benjamin via WWE game. Firefly was on a WWE game. And
the SmackDown vs. Raw 2006 soundtrack was also very good.
I didn't know who Megadeth was before Symphony of Destruction was on there. I had heard of them because of the Goldberg theme that they did.
Yeah.
But I just was like, man, that song sucks. I'm not listening to them.
I'm trying to think of other ones. There's obviously a lot of really good video game soundtracks. I know that people like the 2K ones, but obviously that kind of leans away from like my music tastes. But I mean, a lot of the newer ones kind of have, like, the new Madden ones are all basically the same style. It's like more of that poppy rap stuff. Like, I get it has its niche. It's just not my thing. But how many vinyls do you have now in that collection, by the way?
I would say about 30, because I bought the only way I know that is I bought a 25 pack of like slips, and we just ran out, and we got a couple more vinyls since then. So I actually need to pick some up, but probably about 30.
Who's your favorite artist of all time? Do you have one?
Sublime, without a doubt. Sublime.
Okay. I can respect that. That's a good choice.
I love Sublime. Like, even their corny songs, like, I really, really enjoy, but,
We are at a Slipknot at all.
Yeah. here and there, like the main stuff that I would hear, like Duality.
Notorious Ice Nine Kills this summer.
Are they? I can't wait to not go to that. here's a funny one. So I lived in the middle of nowhere, right? So nothing ever came there. Montgomery Gentry came there once.
Dude, I love Montgomery Gentry. So
they came there once, but other than that, Chameleonaire one time. You would occasionally get like two members of Nappy Roots, and you wouldn't. Let's be real. If just three guys showed up and said they were in Nappy Roots, or three guys showed up and said they were in plain white tees, or them franchise boys, or I don't know, any generic rock band in the 2000s, and they just started to play the music, you would not doubt it whatsoever. You'd just be like,
speaking of that, I got banned from Hinge because in my bio, I said I was one half of the Chainsmokers, and somebody reported me. And
see?
I can't get it back. So
if two random white guys showed up and they said, "We are the Chainsmokers," and they had like a little bit of stubble and they were tall and had those jackets that really, and a plain white shirt underneath, exactly. I'd be like, "They're the fucking Chainsmokers. That's them. They're no questions." But nobody ever came here, like where I lived. And then as soon as I moved, they're like, "Nelly is coming." And I was like, "I would have went to that.
I love Nelly.
I would have went to that." Like, if I listened to any of his music in 10 years, no, but I would have.
I had that Sweatsuit album like when I was in like junior high. I played that thing on repeat all the time.
Avant came to town one time.
Really?
R&B singer. And here's one for you. Afro Man lived like 20 minutes from me.
Like
Afro Man. He walks around town in like these very like bright suits, and he's got like six cell phones.
What the hell?
Afro Man. He would occasionally do concerts. Yeah.
I remember when I was in like 10th grade, one half of LMFAO commented on one of my Instagram posts, and I thought I was the coolest human being alive.
So, I don't know if you know this, but I always go down the rabbit hole. Do you know who is the brother of one of the members of LMFAO?
I do not.
Rockwell. You know who Rockwell is?
What?
I always feel like somebody's watching me. Obviously, that's Michael Jackson singing the hook. But Rockwell is the brother of one of the members of LMFAO, the uncle of the other one. And their father was like a giant record producer.
So wait, the LMFAO guys are related then?
Yes, the LMFAO guys are our uncle and son, uncle and nephew. And then Rockwell is the older one's brother. Their father was a big a Motown producer, and Rockwell got his record deal without his dad knowing it, so nobody would accuse him of nepotism. But then I do think it's funny. He's like, "Hey, I got this record deal on my own. Can you get me Michael Jackson on the hook of this song?"
That's hilarious.
Isn't that mind blowing?
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. What the hell is
it? Because somebody's watching you?
So, speaking of that, in the song Werewolf on the new Motionless and White album, they do a little cameo to that. So now you've got more reason to listen to it. You'll like that song.
That's a classic. That's a classic. Dana White said that the only people that he's outright told to never ask him for tickets again is LMFAO.
Really?
Because
I bet they were just a handful.
Because their reps, I guess, hit up Dana White and were like, "Hey, they want tickets and they want good seats. Don't give them bad seats."
Oh, so there was dicks about it.
Yeah, and he said no. I would
figure as much. The song "Man, I Feel Like a Woman" by Shania Twain is in my top favorite songs of all time. I don't know how you do. You have like a song in terms of song. I know I have a playlist called "Songs I Don't Skip." Is there a song that like anytime it comes on, it doesn't matter how many times you've heard it, you will not skip through it? There's a few for me, but
One that nobody's ever heard of, OG Mako, Ponce de Leon, "Outside" is a very good song. But besides that, let me see, because there's probably sitting on my phone right now. Anything from A Tribe Called Quest, I don't skip.
Okay.
They're my favorite hip hop group ever. Let's see as I scroll through here. Rage Against the Machine, "Bulls on Parade" is one too. I love Rage Against the Machine.
If you like that, you will like Motionless and White. I promise.
Okay. There's a cover of "Zombie" by a band called Crew Skin. That's very good.
Oh my goodness, Sean! Yes.
I used that as a theme one time.
The original song "Zombie" is very good. Bad Wolves actually did a cover of "Zombie" too. Yep. That cover is.
They were supposed to do
beautiful.
It with Dolores, weren't they?
They were. I think she did. She pass or somebody?
Yeah, there was a reason that they couldn't. She could record the lyrics.
No, but that cover, anytime a band covers that song, I know a few have done it. It's obviously got high expectations to live up to. Bad Wolves, their cover is very good in that. But I love that song. Such a good song.
Yeah. I mean, I had posted the other day, it's mind-boggling that we are 8 years further from Alien Ant Farm, Smooth Criminal, to now than they were from the original song. Like,
They killed it when they covered that, though.
They did.
That was a hell of a cover.
It was better than the original by far. Wasn't even close. I bought that album and I was like, "Wow, they actually don't suck. They're pretty good." Movies was a great song, but I thought they dominated it. It makes me happy because Michael Jackson sucks as a person. That they did they took ownership of that song. Like, that's their song now. It ain't his anymore.
I saw a TikTok that made me laugh really hard. It was like this dude saying how you know, hey, we got to not listen to any of these artists who are up to some weird shit. Like, R. Kelly can't listen to him anymore. Let's not support any movies that all these bad people have made. And then Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson came on. He's like, what? He's like turning up the volume. He's like, nah, I'm not hearing what you're saying. So it is weird, though, isn't it? How, like, we just kind of rub that under the rug with Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Like, I think on that one, I just accept the fact that Alien Ant Farm took ownership of that song. That's theirs now. Okay. I don't consider it Michael Jackson. I'm not thinking of Michael Jackson when I hear that song at all.
There are a few Michael Jackson songs and songs that I don't skip, though. I got to admit.
There's some good songs, but it is worrisome to me. Like, I'll hear people that are sampling R. Kelly songs like today, and I'm like, just lean out of that. Yeah. Like, maybe don't do that.
Ignition was a great song. I'm not going to pretend I'm perfect. Anytime Ignition comes on, I bop my head and I sing along with it. It's catchy and I love it.
But it's like, maybe don't sample it. Maybe don't put money in the guy's pocket right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a difference between separating art from artists and sampling it and making him more money. That's understandable. Yeah. Rob Zombie's, what the hell is it called? Why am I blanking on it? There's so many Rob Zombie songs that I like, so let me pull it up. I don't know what's going on outside my house. It sounds like somebody's moving. Can you hear that?
Yeah, a little bit.
It sounds like there's an argument about to break down in the south side of Pittsburgh.
I hope I'm there to see it.
Which isn't weird, by the way. Dragula by Rob Zombie, by the way.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That might be my favorite song of all time.
That's a fair greatest song of all time for somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just putting out, like, not just great metal music, but stuff that crossed into the mainstream and you couldn't not listen to for like 4 or 5 years. Everybody was listening to Rob Zombie. It was so good.
I'll never forgive him for Halloween 2, though.
I didn't watch it.
Have you seen his original remake?
I did, but I didn't watch the second one.
You're not missing anything. Save yourself and don't watch the second one.
I only watched the original Halloween this past year. I had never watched it before. I wasn't a big horror movie guy growing up.
Really?
And I especially don't like just egregiously gory stuff. And that wasn't.
And it's not, yeah.
It was just a really great movie.
Yeah.
It was just really, really good. And then I'm like, oh, so that's usually what happens. The first movie is so good, they can justify doing 12 sequels that are
That's horrible. What the entire 1980s was. They did the same thing with, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. They just said, fuck, this is a cash grab. People will go see it. Let's do seven of them.
Oh, I mean, like, so I had somebody one time that hit me up about writing a movie, and
did you?
I did some consulting for it, and it was horrible, but it was very clearly a cash grab on the horror genre, because that's the idea. They're so low budget that you can make your money back on it. Let me tell you, this did not make its money back. And I realized pretty soon in, this isn't going to be good. When they're telling the script writer, have the script done in a week and a half, 2 weeks. Oh. And then and then that got chopped down. I was like, oh no, this ain't going to work. This isn't something I want to be a part of.
Yeah, well, as somebody here, I'll lower this. As somebody who loves the Halloween franchise, I have that. I've got a whole wall dedicated to that movie. Once like October rolls around and sci-fi does that thing where they just play all of them in a row on a loop, even the horrible ones, I will sit and I will watch all of them. It's just, that's just like my thing, I guess.
I loved the first one. There's a lot of great movies I missed out on. Like, I just watched The Departed for the first time.
The same way. Like, a lot of like big pop culture icon movies I just haven't seen. Like, I've never seen a Rocky movie all the way through. I'm trying to think of other ones that I haven't seen. I haven't seen Top Gun, which apparently the new one's really good.
I didn't like the first Top Gun.
Didn't you?
I didn't like it.
Okay. So, you know, my niche is...
But I heard the new one's incredible.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of people say that they like the newer one better than the original one. So,
yeah.
But no, my niche has always been... I'm not a big movie guy. Like, I love Halloween. I'm more of like a Batman guy. I like Batman the Animated Series. I know you collect toys, by the way. What all do you collect? I remember seeing you on one of Aligo's videos.
So I stopped collecting Jack's BCA. I did that like before I moved as a disposable income thing. I'm spending all my money now. I collected the first about 10 series of AEW figures, unrivaled and unmatched. And my straight up goal with that is put them in protectors, put them in a closet for 20 years, sell them. It's an investment. That's all it is.
Okay.
I'm going to sell them when I retire. The ones that I like, though, I've collected some ECW original San Francisco toy makers. Original San Francisco toy makers made WCW figures in the mid 90s, and they were the people from LJN that made the figures in the 80s. So that's the main thing. Like the ECW then. And I like those because they're good looking figures.
Yeah.
And I like Jack's BCA because they're ugly figures. They're hideous. I also collect some bootleg figures because I think they're funny.
What's a good example of a bootleg figure that you have?
Hold on one second.
I'm excited
for this.
Keep this
audio.
Okay. This is gonna be fantastic. All right, I'm gonna keep this going while Sean finds this bootleg figure. No, anybody who watches my stuff, you know what I collect. You know I like Batman. You know I got a bunch of Batman Funkos. I got the occasional wrestling one, like Jeff Hardy. I'm always going to have that. Anything Jeff Hardy related is what I'll collect. I like James Bond. You see a Connery painting next to me. Anything Michael Myers, Jeff Hardy related, that is what I will do. I'm excited to see this bootleg figure, though.
Unfortunately, I've not moved those over yet. But they're just horrible. Like you'll find a Billy Gunn looking figure that is made out of the cheapest hollow plastic, and it'll say Mr. Butt or something on it.
Mr. Butt, I love that.
Yeah, they're so bad.
There was a wrestling video game that was completely like based off of WWE guys, but they used like bootleg names. I cannot remember the name of it, and it's going to piss me off so bad.
I know which one you're talking about. It looked horrible.
Yeah, no, it was horrible. And oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to look that up later just because it's so funny. But Kurt Angle was like Kurt Angel or something. Like, it was very crystal clear what they were doing. Oh, my goodness. Kurt Angle.
I remember that with a lot of the baseball games in like the early 90s didn't have the MLBPA license.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would put Rob Dibble into pitch and it was Ron Dribble or something like that.
That's fantastic. Were you big, like you're a big sports gamer guy, like in the kind
yeah,
of,
that's, okay. That's the main thing I still play.
Okay.
Sports games.
Okay, cool. So the big thing now is like emulators, you know, playing old games on great graphics. I have no idea how to do that. Don't know where to find one, but I do have a PlayStation 2 where I still play. Did you ever play ESPN NFL 2K5?
I wasn't into football at that point.
Okay.
I mean, I've played it a little bit, but I didn't get into football for a few years afterwards. I played in like a local rec league and I was like, oh man, I love football. This is awesome. So around like 2009 is when I really got into it. So before that it was NFL Blitz the League or nothing.
Oh, okay.
Or not even NFL. It was just Blitz the League.
Yeah. You're a big MVP baseball guy then?
I was. And after that, there wasn't a real good option for a few years. But as soon as MLB The Show hit, oh man, Road to the Show was a game changer for me.
It might be the best sports game on the market. Like, it is just so good, the presentation of that game.
Road to the Show is just the perfect game mode to just sit there and play and enjoy and have fun. And they changed it. They are the reason why every single sports game has a one-person, single-person career mode now.
It's fantastic too. It's very realistic. And you look at what I remember 2K had one a few years ago where it was basically just a horrible Spike Lee movie shoved down your throat where like you had like this generic nickname that every person who played it had. So like you could like I could be named Jarrett Bailey in the game, but my name was DJ. Like what in the hell is this stupidity?
Yeah.
I love Road to the Show for that. Like they've just really gotten it. Like video games don't have to be difficult. Like at the end of the day, it can just be fun.
Yeah, man. Like that's what I almost like getting into a rhythm. Like I love pitching on MLB The Show because it gets my mind into a nice rhythm. I've got ADHD like severely. So sometimes I like something that makes me focus.
Okay.
So I get into that rhythm of pitching, and honestly, it's perfect for dexterity too, which right. helps you in all forms of life. But I'd started to play NHL games a couple years ago, and that was fun. Started to play FIFA, got into that a little bit, but also Demolition Derby games.
Oh yeah. did you have a ATV Off-Road Fury?
Oh, buddy, did I? I had MX 2002, and I would play the demo of it over and over again. And me and my cousin would just play tag on that, where you go around.
Just try to run into each other?
Try to run into each other, and it wasn't even an official game. But, I mean, even back to the early 2000s or the late 90s, Thrasher Skate and Destroy was such a good skateboarding game that nobody talks about. It had ragdoll physics, so you could just go all the way up on a half pipe and then ragdoll your character and just slam them into the ground. And there was a game where you had to hurt yourself as much as possible in there. There were so many good games that have just gone forgotten.
The PlayStation 2 era video games, to me, as a kid, I loved it, obviously. But looking back, it was just so amazing. I miss them.
White hot period of GTA San Andreas, True Crime Streets of LA, Need for Speed Underground, WWE Here Comes the Pain.
Need for Speed Underground soundtrack, by the way, ungodly.
Yeah. Those four games specifically, I had those, and I would have been good for years afterwards. Yep. Like. Yep. Here Comes the Pain, Need for Speed Underground, and Streets of LA and GTA San Andreas. That's what I needed.
I just missed the Here Comes the Pain boom. That was a little bit too young for it, but like 06 through 08, that was kind of like my little era of wrestling games. And I'm still just as satisfied. All of them were great. Had great soundtracks. The story mode and all of them were, well, 06 and 07 were good. The story mode for 08 wasn't great, but the My GM was probably the best that it was there because it had ECW. I think Teddy Long was the GM of ECW in that game. I might be wrong. You might have to correct me on that. I think so, because I think Coachman was for Raw. I don't know. It was Tommy Dreamer was the GM, because Teddy was SmackDown. So
yeah,
it would have been Tommy Dreamer as the GM for ECW. What a time to be alive.
Man, that was that 2003 year, though, for me was unreal good. And then SmackDown versus Raw happened.
Yeah.
And those were really great games as well.
There were a few for Xbox that came out. It was like, instead of like SmackDown, it was like Raw 2 or Raw 3. I played a few of those. Those weren't horrible, but
yeah.
I felt like they were the apex of video games. Sean, I asked you for like 40 minutes. You stayed much longer than that. I don't mean to take up too much of your time. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you doing this, man. This has been a lot of fun.
I appreciate you having me. How about that one?
I appreciate you appreciating me. Plug anything that you would like. For the next little bit here, I'll even bring you full screen if I can do that.
Hey, just fightful.com. That's what I do. That's my lifeblood. That's what I put all my work into. Just Fightful and fightfulselect.com. And again, I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you, my friend, for doing this. This is a lot of fun. This is a great first iteration of this. Again, no notes, no research, just us bullshitting for a little bit. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I'll see you on the Twitter world, and I'm sure
we'll hopefully not. I am one little incident away from going full Cody and making my Twitter Fightful Community Outreach.
Oh, I enjoy your Twitter though. I really hope you don't do that. You've got a great Twitter.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, here's to hoping you don't do that, but thank you everybody for either you're watching this on YouTube, listening to us on podcast. Appreciate you. Thank you to the Believe Network for letting me do this. This is a lot of fun. So yeah, we'll be back. Episode 2, just announced earlier, former CEO of the Raiders, Amy Trask, pioneer in the NFL and NFL history. Cannot wait to do that. That'll be a lot of fun. Again, Sean, it's been a blast, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
I hope so.